Welcome to the XBLA Fancast, episode 8 for Tuesday, April 12th, 2011. And I'm joined today by Tyler and Andrew, as usual. And we have a special guest from TimeGate Studios to talk about Section 8 with us, and that's Mark Yetter.
Hey, this is Tyler Cameron, associate editor of Xbox Live Arcade Fans. I'm happy to be back after a few weeks of hiatus, so I'm ready to talk some games with you guys.
I'm Andrew Cruz, writer for XBLA Fans, and I'm still here.
I'm Mark Yetter. I'm a game designer at TimeGate Studios, and I worked on the entire project, Section 8 Prejudice.
Very cool. Nice. All right, so can you give us like the quick, you know, 1 minute pitch as to why people should check out Section 8?
Sure. Section 8 Prejudice is a sci-fi universe, multiplayer focused, sort of big team battle, first person shooter. It's really awesome. It's exciting. You've got all sorts of cool action. You've got all sorts of cool characters and abilities and weapons, and the maps are awesome. And on a high level, that's what it is. It's got itself, you know, a storyline campaign, but you know, when it comes to the multiplayer, which is the kind of where the game really focuses, you've got these large 32 player battles on these big maps, and the characters can move really fast. They have jetpacks, all sorts of high powered weapons. And one of the, you know, there's a couple other unique features, like when you respawn or spawn for the first time, you pick your spawn location and you actually drop in from a dropship, which is like 10,000 or something feet up in the air, and it's really awesome. You're skydiving, you control your character, and you pick exactly where you want to land.
Awesome. Yeah, I know I played the original Section 8, and that was my absolute favorite part of the game, was just that orbital drop at the beginning of each level when you spawn. So, I mean, honestly, I enjoyed dying because it meant I get to drop again, and that was just so much fun. And,
yeah, that's kind of the point. We see, you know, when we're saying, man, I really hate the freaking respawn timer on these, you know, when you're playing a game, watching that countdown number, why not make it fun?
Yeah, exactly. And I really like what you guys are doing with the whole multiplayer aspect, especially now that we know it's coming to digital platforms like Xbox Live Arcade and PlayStation Network, where you're going to have 32 players on at a time, because that's something that I don't think any other games are really utilizing at this time. And I think you said something about dedicated servers. Is that going to be on consoles as well, or is that just PC?
Oh, for sure. We have, like, big-time dedicated server support on all the platforms. And we're going to be hosting a lot of servers for consoles ourselves, dedicated, so that'll be, like, for the big games, 32 players. But you can actually, as a, you know, a player or a clan yourself, you could host a dedicated server on your PC for the Xbox or the PS3. It's pretty cool.
Awesome. Wow.
Very cool.
Yeah, definitely. And I know one of the bigger complaints for me, at least, with the original Section 8 was the single-player aspect. What have you guys done to just revamp that this time around?
Well, I would call it less of a revamp, more of an entirely fresh. I mean, the first time around, we thought, well, you know, at the last minute, you know, we kind of wanted to put some single player in there, but, you know, we didn't have a lot of time. We didn't make custom maps for it and stuff. So we just kind of put it in. It was this tutorial with a story, but this time we, from the start, we decided we're going to do a huge, you know, we're going to split our resources and focus a lot on this single player story, this campaign. We made like all sorts of awesome custom content, and like the levels are well scripted. They've got good story integration. They've got all these boss battles and stuff like that. It's a lot fuller of an experience.
Very cool. And I think you guys also added in a new mode called Swarm Mode. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we did. Swarm Mode is a co-op. It's like a four-player co-op cooperative kind of survival mode, you might say. And then what it is the four players, you're defending a control point, which is essentially a base, and you're getting hit by waves and waves of enemies, and they're coming in from all angles. You know, they drop in like normal players do, and they start bringing in vehicles, and they get tougher and smarter and stuff, and you're just trying to survive for this 15 minutes. And you know, it's a lot of fun. It's like got the fun of like the shooter survival, like you would see in like a horde mode, but when you add in the sort of deployable system, which as a part of the game, I guess to briefly explain, every time you get kills or do anything in the game, you get some money, and you can use the money to buy turrets or vehicles or all sorts of stuff and put them anywhere you want on the map. And so when you're trying to survive and you're like buying turrets and stuff, it's like almost, you're mixing in this sort of tower defense element, and you're like putting strategically placing your defenses and, you know, hiding behind cover and all sorts of fun stuff like that.
Yeah, I know. Swarm mode is actually one of the few parts I actually have gotten to play so far about the game, and I really enjoyed it because it really does have that uniqueness of like the horde type of mode where, you know, it's the wave spawns of enemies, but it was great being able to drop down, you know, a mech to fight with or just new weapons. And I really enjoyed the fact that there were different ammo types for all the different guns that, you know, kind of made them all feel a little bit different, which that was really cool.
Oh, definitely. That is my personal favorite, and I mean, I'm a game systems designer, and so that's what I kind of work on, so I'm biased. But for me, the new feature for this sequel that is my favorite is definitely the way we've expanded all the weapons and stuff. We've made these variations to all the guns. There's like, you can get like different ammo types, different sort of modifications to the way they shoot and stuff like that. And like, we spent a lot of time making sure that they're all very different and they have their own sort of unique roles, but they're also all very balanced. You know, you can try out all sorts of things, and it's like, you're not, we don't want to see everyone funneling into the, you know, the missile launcher because it's like, you know, mini nuke or something. We want it to be balanced and fun. And it's cool. I mean, we took the philosophy of like, it's not, the game is a totally free form class system. You don't actually have classes. You pick your stuff. Just, you can pick anything you want. But the way that the guns and the equipment and stuff are designed is they're very asymmetrical. So you can make your own class that has a very specific role, and it's cool to have diversity on your team.
Yeah, very cool. I know that's something that always frustrates me a lot about some of the bigger online games, especially the shooters, is it ends up to the point where everyone ends up using one or two guns, and you don't ever see any reason to use, you know, the other 90 that they say they have in the game, because literally you'd be at such a big disadvantage.
For sure. I mean, as a gamer myself, I mean, all, you know, most serious gamers and shooter players are looking for that dominant strategy, and you want to make sure that there's not clearly one or two, because that does kind of makes your game boring.
Yeah, for sure. So what have you guys done to make this able to stand up against some of those, you know, $60 AAA titles like Call of Duty or like Halo?
Well, you know, what we really try to bring is, you know, we're a $15 XBLA title, but we try and bring an experience that is genuinely unique and fun and can, in a lot of ways, you know, say, wow, well, this is actually better than a lot of $60 titles. These things are I don't see these types of play or this much fun or this much, you know, instant action or whatever in a $60 title. And then for $15, we're hoping to, because it's like a big multiplayer battle game, and so the community is going to be what drives it. And so at $15, we want it to be a game where it's like, yo, I picked up this game, it's $15, I'm going to tell my friends. And, you know, once you get a lot of people playing, that's where all the fun is, and you get all these clans, and it's like all your friends play it, of course you want to play.
Definitely. I know the whole clan support thing was a big thing that got me involved with Halo 2 when that came out, was I just loved the fact that it had the online stat tracking and the clan support and stuff like that. So have you guys done some stuff with that from what you did with the original title?
For sure. We have as much and more of the stat tracking that we did in the first game. We have a huge stats portal. It's going to be up and running as soon as the game releases, and you'll be able to track all sorts of awesome, like, you know, lifetime damage and kills, but also records and in a life and, you know, in games and stuff like that. And we'll be doing a cool thing where we're like, you know, every couple months we're rolling seasons, and like at the end of a season, the people with the best stats, you know, and clans and individuals will get awards, and you can see like, oh man, this guy was like top 10 in like, you know, medic heals in season one, and so he was like, you know, he seems pretty cool. It'll be fun. It's fun. You'll feel like really, you know, proud of your profile. You can see what you've been doing, you know, it tracks all that stuff.
Very cool. So there'll be leaderboard type systems, but is there any kind of like leveling system as well? Or is
there is also a leveling system. Okay. It, that is what I was saying before, is mostly an out of game stats portal that track. Well, actually there's an in game element to it as well, but you won't be able to see other players as much in game. But if you go, you know, out of game, and you can see similar to like what you would see in like Halo Reach, they have a huge stats portal. So do we. And it's like, you can track all their stats, but in game, you know, when you're playing games, you know, if you're playing offline or online, you're getting XP, and that's helping you rank up. And so, like, as you rank up, you earn more unlocks or new kind of fun variants to weapons or equipment or cosmetic upgrades and all sorts of stuff like that.
Very cool. All right. And I know this one is completely independently funded and developed and published by TimeGate. So what has that kind of freed you up to do that you weren't able to do last time?
Well, it's a mix. Like, one, when we're developing the game itself, when you don't have a publisher, you don't have someone telling you what to do, you get to make the decisions you want to make. You know, you're not having to answer to someone that says, well, I want the sniper rifle to be like this, and that's always nice. But then another big thing that I would say the bigger thing is that when the game does release and we want to support it with new features, new game modes, new maps, DLCs or free or whatever, you know, we have to go through less channels. We have to go through less red tape and we can just patch it a lot easier in that way.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So you guys already have a DLC plan in place for the game once it launches?
I mean, I would say our early DLC stuff is definitely pretty planned out. We still have, you know, down the road, you never know, but mm-hmm. we have a bunch of content that we're working on, because the game is about to release, and so it's yeah. you know, it's finished and it's about to go out the door, and we're working on this DLC stuff, and it's actually some really good stuff that we've got in the pipe that's going to be it will not take long for these DLCs to come out after the game release.
Very cool. I know that's actually something we've been trying to tell a lot of our fans, is that a lot of these games, you know, have to wait for certification and wait for, you know, the period when they can actually release. So, I mean, they have, you know, a couple weeks between that where they can work on DLC, and that's why they see it so quickly. Because a lot of people we know have been complaining about how quick DLC seems to pop out the door sometimes nowadays. And it's mm-hmm. more of a fan thing with, you know, the time you have left before the game launches.
Yeah, that's definitely true. That's definitely true. We took a lot of things. Like right when we hit that point where we're like, well, we've got what we want. Let's wrap it up for the game. We take all these fresh ideas that we're like, well, we didn't have time to fit these in, or well, this was really awesome, or let's try something totally different that people aren't expecting. And that's when we started experimenting. And then that stuff is more of the stuff that's going to end up in DLC. I can't really say specifically, but.
Understandable. And I know the original actually ended up coming out for the PlayStation Network. Did that start to, you know, drive the concept that this would go to digital distribution in the future for the sequel?
It did in a way. It was that PlayStation Network release was actually our first time self-publishing,
mm-hmm.
and that was a big deal for us because we, in terms of like, I guess, you know, the whole process, we figured it out. We knew at that point, okay, well, we can actually make a game and do it on our own. And so that really influenced the fact that we did self-publish. And then after through the process of making Section 8 Prejudice, we decided later on that, well, digital makes a lot of sense for this game.
When I was actually playing it, I was just sitting there. I'm like, I wish more games that were just multiplayer focused would come out, because, I mean, I was a huge fan of Shadowrun, which was another multiplayer only game. And mm-hmm. I like the breakup that you get between, you know, the two or three AAA titles that are going to come out exactly at the same time in November, basically. And, I mean, come, you know, 6 months down the road, I get bored with them and I want something different. And it's just a great thing to have something, you know, you can pop in. And I love the fact that this is coming out for, you know, $15 with as much content plus more from the original.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, like it or not, when you're not a big franchise, you're not going to get the attention that you want, right? You can't compete. We wouldn't release in November, you know, and spend millions and millions of dollars trying to out-advertise a Call of Duty game. But you know, if you can, you know, get the timing right and get the accessibility, you can hopefully break in and get a big audience.
For sure. Speaking of accessibility, is this something you think that people are going to be able to pick up and play, and, you know, not constantly feel like everyone else in the room is way better than them if they're not very familiar with shooter games? Or is this something where, you know, like, what's the separation going to be between, you know, the people who play all the time and, you know, the new gamers, in a sense?
Well,
like in a lobby.
I would say that we spent time I mean, the game in general and the work we did towards the sequel, we tried to make it as more accessible and as accessible as possible. From a few of the changes from the first game were like we tried to remove or make, you know, some sort of complex hidden mechanics more transparent, and we simplified that. We have a lot of fun roles that are maybe a little bit less skill based that you might be able to play, or not. I wouldn't say that they're less skill based, but they're just different. If you're less of a Twitch shooter player, you could play kind of a more strategy style, and you can customize yourself so that, oh, okay, I really like setting up turrets a bit more, you know, I can do that, or I like playing kind of medic style, I can do that. And there's a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of, you know, there's ways to play, especially if you're not like a MLG pro shooter player.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not Tyler, you can still do all right.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I take offense to the MLG thing. No, I'm just kidding. it has such a snobby connotation to it, you know? There's like the MLG players and then everyone else, you know? That's very funny. But,
don't get me wrong, the game is very good for hardcore players and a clan playing against, you know, a totally, you know, pickup group style. I mean, it's not even going to – they'll get crushed, but, you know, you won't see that. We have, like, a pretty good matchmaking system that takes – you know, it tries to match up, like, in a game. Say if you're joining a random game and there's a couple really good players and there's a couple, you know, new players that aren't as good, it matches up the skill level of both teams as best – you know, as you can with that game. And so you're seeing, like, you know, pretty even distribution.
Okay, very cool.
Yeah.
And speaking on clans, is there any kind of clan matchmaking, or is that more or less left up to, you know, outside sources like game battles? And
It's there's not a specific clan matchmaking, but the tools for hosting your own games are very powerful. And so if a clan wants to play another clan, setting up a private match is as easy as anything else. And that's what you would probably do. And you could set up, you know, you could say, okay, well, we'll host up a server. What type of game do you want to play? How many people are you bringing? And we can do it. Do you want bots? Do you want no bots? It's really easy.
Very cool. And I know the online reporting will definitely help with that, because it's one of the biggest frustrations you can have if you come from that background. Cause I used to play a lot of those type of games from like a clan perspective, especially Halo. And when you had something that didn't online track, it was really frustrating when the other team tried to contest it. So it's nice to have an actual record online that they can look up and see who actually won the match.
Yeah, that is definitely a big thing.
Now, yeah. When you say matchmaking kind of sorts teams to keep them even, now I've seen, and for example, in Monday Night Combat, I'll play with a lot of guys that are really good, and I'll just kind of be like the worst player on a team. But we'll join a lobby together, and then it's five random people get put against us, and they lose every time. Is there a way to combat that, or is it going to be kind of if you join as a party, then you're pretty much already at advantage because you've played together before? You're in a party chat, stuff like that.
Well, that's a good question, and there is an advantage. Honestly, I think there can be an advantage, because the balancing system in a game also, of course, favors people that join together, you know, because we don't want to be splitting friends up that are trying to play together. But
yeah.
So there is a bit of an advantage there, but, you know, when the thing is that when you're playing 32-player games, that situation becomes a little bit less of a deal, because like you and your five friends are probably pretty good, and you're probably pretty medium high ranked, I would imagine. You know, you've leveled up, you've played together, you win games. And so if you five join the game, you know, the five of you get put on one team, which has 16 players, and, you know, then the rest of the game, which is the other 27 players, are going to be sorted to make it as even a matchup as possible. So, you know, if you guys join a game, the auto match for sort of, I mean, well, the balancing system will probably maybe weigh the other team with a few more of the better random players.
Would it go as far as say it doesn't fill up to 32 players? Would it go as far as to say do a game of like 12 on 8 or something like that if you had a lot of higher ranked players on the other team?
It would not do that, but if it depends. Okay, so if there's like a pretty big bot support for the game, and if you're playing a game with bots and the game isn't full, there will be AI on the teams assisting to fill those slots, and mm-hmm. if but, or not, you can join games that have AI or not, but it will definitely keep the teams. Or at least the way the system works now, mm-hmm. it keeps the team's numbers balanced, because that is, if you were playing 5v8 or something, that would be a huge, huge. It's in the modes, like, because they're kind of objective based modes, a player numbers advantage can be tremendous, and so we try and keep it as even as possible.
Oh yeah, definitely in an objective game. I was talking pretty much just like a Slayer or a kill people game type, something like that. The objective modes, it's completely different because, you know, no matter how bad a player is, he can still carry a flag or, you know, whatever
exactly.
objective modes you may have. So
exactly. That's a good point. I mean, that is something worth looking into, and you never know, like in a patch, we could look at, say, more extreme measures for trying to balance games, you know? But I mean,
yeah.
At some point you say, well, you know, one team, these guys played well. They maybe they deserve to win. Or
yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm just you know thinking of things that have turned me off to shooters in the past. For say like Halo or something like that, you'll commonly see four really high ranked players in a party together, and as soon as you get matched up against them, you're like, oh, I don't even care the three guys they give me because I really don't want to play these guys.
Yeah,
that can be discouraging.
I know with Halo, one thing that can be discouraging is when you go into especially a bigger match, and say it's like 8-on-8 or something, and half your team just drops at the start, so now you're playing 4-on-8. Is there going to be a system in place where people get moved in at the middle of the match, or is it just going to be your 4-on-8 for the rest of the match?
No, we totally have, you know, these servers will have running, they kind of essentially, we do more of a consistent, like continuous games, you know,
mm-hmm.
game after game we'll play, and you can join a server, you could join mid-match. People leave your team mid-match, you'll get new people will be brought in. And even if new people aren't brought in, you know, it takes maybe a minute or,
yeah.
you know, minute and a half to get people in.
Yeah.
You will still have, you know, AI replacements will jump in, you know, immediately if people leave or disconnect and stuff like that.
Yeah, very
that's,
cool.
Yeah, that's a big thing. We try to eliminate all the cases where a game is just completely ruined because, you know, someone quits or the internet goes out or whatever. That's no fun.
Yeah.
And for those of the people who are not as familiar with the Section 8, you know, multiplayer, I know the game modes are pretty unique in the fact that it has, you know, like four or five different things going on at the same time. Could you explain a little bit about that?
Sure. The main big battle multiplayer mode is called Conquest, and it's up to it. You can play it with up to 32 players. You can also play sort of smaller versions of it if you want to play in-house or you just like playing on a smaller scale. And the way it works is it's basically a control point, like capture and hold scenario where there are like four points on the map and you're trying to capture and hold them, as many of them as you can for your team. And based on however many your team is holding on to, you earn points towards the game victory, like kind of a domination mode. And
so kind of like Battlefield almost?
Exactly. It's like
okay.
Battlefield Conquest, very similar. But then on top of that, we have what are called dynamic combat missions, or DCMs, and what they are is they are these random side missions that can spawn in during the game kind of at unpredictable times, and they're really awesome because what they do is they mix up the game because they could be anywhere on the map, they could be any of a different missions. There's like capture the flag, there's like escorts, there's like assassinations, there's like special vehicle escorts and stuff like that, like a convoy, and like there's a whole bunch of missions. There's like 9 different missions and they could spawn in for either team, and it really kind of throws like a wrench in the game. It's like it's not a stalemate anymore of 2 points and 2 points and there's a rush of people to that point, and it's awesome because you can try and complete these side missions, and you know whichever team wins those DCMs gets like a big bonus chunk of points towards winning.
That is really awesome that you guys do that, because I have a bit of a confession to make. Past couple of days, I've been playing Killzone 3 online with my friends from back home on PlayStation 3, and I'm not really too familiar with the type of multiplayer it is, but they have a similar mode where it's just called Warzone, and
Right. Basically
it's just like you play one game mode until someone wins, and it changes it up, and it randomly selects another one, so you get, you know, a team deathmatch, and then after that's over, it does like a capture and hold, and then like an assassination type thing, and it's all randomly generated, so you're constantly, the battlefield's kind of dynamically changing based on like the mission types. Yeah, there's only like 5 or 6 or something like that, but it was really interesting, and I think like the idea of like having a main objective to the game with randomly generating side quests, as you put it, is really interesting, especially for a downloadable title. That blows my mind that this is all going to be for $15. But like you said, the monkey wrench that's thrown in there is a really big deal for basically all of the shooters that are on Xbox Live Arcade, because they're very simply just like a few objectives or just Team Slayer or something like that. You know, like I said, Battlefield or Blacklight, Tangle Down. I mean, those are very straightforward type of games.
Right.
And this is something that is completely new and different, and it really does change things up a lot, and I think that's really impressive.
Yeah, and when we're, you know, when you're thinking about it, there's two kind of big positives from this type of system for us as a developer, when we're like saying, hey, do we want to do like all these different game modes, do Capture the Flag, do King of the Hill and stuff like that, like what Halo or Call of Duty does. They have like tons of game modes, but
when we're
trying to fill bigger games with more players, and we're trying to deal with possibly a smaller audience than Call of Duty or Halo or any other big game. And so like making a kind of fun conglomerate mode that takes a bit of everything in a dynamic way so that it has like fun replay value, because you're not going to get bored of it because no game is the same. But
putting
all your players in the same game mode really makes it so that you're filling, you know, you got all these servers and they're packed, and you've got that's what you want. You know, you don't want dead modes and stuff like that. You bring it all together.
That's cool. Go ahead, Andrew.
Do you have any multi-team mode? So, I mean, with 32 players, there's a lot you can do there. Was there any 4-8 mode or anything like that?
We don't have any. We only have 2-team modes right now, at least in the release. But, you know, we are, you know, kind of experimenting a bit more when it comes to DLC game modes that we're working on and stuff. So, you know, you never know.
All right. Cool.
I have a question. So basically, like looking at the bullet list for this game, I mean, it has 32 player online multiplayer, it has dedicated servers, it has bots, it has a single player campaign, it has all these things that are new, bigger, and improved over the last game, yet it's $15. I mean, at what point did you guys decide that you wanted to make this a downloadable title? Because like everything that we've talked about is something that I would personally pay $60 for and be happy with, because I did enjoy the first game, but I didn't really feel that I wanted to buy it. But I mean, everything that like we've talked about is seems just like better and improved. Like, at what point did you guys decide that you wanted to make this just a simple downloadable title?
Right. Well, I mean, that's a good question. And, you know, it wasn't early, actually, in the development. We were, you know, we made the first game. It was a $60 retail game. And so we started making this one. And for almost all of the project, our goal was, okay, let's just make a better game straight up. I mean, what else do you do, right? And so you take this, you already go from a $60 game and you improve it. You improve the campaign, you improve the multiplayer, you improve the player leveling, you improve the art, you improve the guns, you know, and that's what we did at the start. And then later, much, much later, we're like, well, we're self-publishing, you know, how's this going to work? Where do we want to fit in? And then we decided to make it go digital. And that's why it's kind of surprising in that way that it has so much stuff and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think it's great. I wish kind of that more games would do that sort of thing, because this is going to, I mean, especially with the market that you're competing with on Xbox Live Arcade, like I said, there isn't really a whole lot of shooters that are doing as much as Section 8 Prejudices. I mean, like I said, you have Battlefield and Blacklight and Monday Night Combat and stuff like that, and those are all like fun, but they only really do one thing, kind of, and this has so many different aspects to it. I mean, like I said, you have the bots, you have the single player aspect, and you have the dynamically changing like mission objectives during combat, and you have clan support. I mean, you have all these things here. It just seems like a game that you could really play for a long time. And of course you have planned DLC coming on top of that too. I mean, you've pretty much carved yourself a section of pie that no one else has really, you know, taken a chance at. It's really pretty impressive. But
how do you plan to keep the community engaged with a game like this? Because, I mean, we've seen cases where shooters come out like a Breach or a Blacklight and they tend to die a month later. But then we see games like Battlefield that are going strong 2 years later, and Monday Night Combat. And you could argue that, you know, Monday Night Combat's incredibly unique and Battlefield is incredibly fun. And this game seems like it's going to be unique and fun, but it's still, you know, walking the fine line of how do you plan on keeping a community involved? Is there some type of like a incentive, sort of like a Battlefield had? Well, once the community reaches 43 million kills together, we'll give you another map or something like that. Or Monday Night Combat gave out the Spunky Cola DLC. What other than DLC, if anything, did you have planned to keep the community active and involved?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I mean, like you said, fundamentally, I mean, I think that the success of Battlefield and other games that are really going strong and in this market, or even in the $60 market, is definitely has a lot to do with the game's core fun and replayability, right? I mean, you've a good game, people want to play a good game for longer. But at the same time, you know, you do have to put out those DLCs and stuff to sort of feed the beast, you know, when people want more content and stuff like that. And so, you know, we have DLCs, and that is kind of a conventional way, but we're going to be very active about that. But also, at the same time, and this isn't, none of this is set in stone, but we're really thinking about saying, you know, maps are nice, right? DLC map packs are nice because that's a new, it's a change of scenery and stuff, but kind of almost more to, I guess it's a more powerful DLC, is a, you know, game modes. And even if we're saying, okay, if the community gets to this point, we release a new game mode for free, that's a huge deal. That's like entirely almost like a new game. You know, that's like an expansion. And that'll really keep people playing because it'll be a totally different experience.
Yeah. Now, I know this would totally cut into your profits, but sometimes you see games that release map packs and they allow everybody to use them, whether they purchase them or not. Or is this going to be a situation where you're going to have segregated audiences, the people that only bought the core game and the people that only bought the core game and the DLC? Or is there going to be some type of middle buffer there where it allows people to play the DLC maps even though they may not have purchased them?
Well, I think that there will be definitely some paid DLC, which will be a purchase model. But also I think that there will be – we're trying not to segregate, and we're trying not to make – people feel forced into, you know, whatever, you know, buying or whatever not. And so, you know, if for example, a game mode comes out for free but there's like a map pack, like everyone is able to still play the game mode, and a lot of people will be playing the new game on the old maps. But, you know, then you'll also have people that bought the map pack or something that are playing on the new maps with just the people that bought the new maps. It'll be kind of a mixed bag, but we want to try and not segregate our community. That's a big priority that we're trying to keep. You know, we want everyone to be able to participate in as much of it as possible. And then at some point, you do have to put, you know, we do need to make money, and people have to pay for certain things too.
Yeah. It's understandable. I just didn't know if you had like a plan on how you're going to deal with that, because you see that a lot of times go one way or the other. It's a tough call.
That's totally true. You know, it's DLC sometimes can kind of cannibalize the community, because half of them take it and half of them don't. And then both halves are less happy because their games are, you know, there's less servers and all sorts of stuff. That's not good.
Yeah.
So what would you say is like the main things that you've kind of listened to the community feedback you got on the first game and changed for the second game? Beyond, you know, expanding and just completely redoing the story in a sense.
Yeah. I mean, the campaign itself, that was easy feedback. Everyone was like, well, we really want a campaign, like a real one. And so we're like, okay, there you go. But like other things, like in terms of like, you know, multiplayer gameplay, we took a hard look at like things like the core combat experience, you know, players' base health and damage. And you know, this time around, and you guys aren't super familiar with the Section 8 and exactly how it felt, but combat is a lot faster this time around. As you know, people, we heard a lot of feedback, people saying, it takes a little too long to kill people. It's not, we don't like that. And so we said, okay, well, we're moving that back. We made more kind of interactivity with guns and grenades and equipment and stuff like that. You'll see a lot of, there's kind of a more variety of a playstyle, right? Where you've got this one gun that's like specialized. It's like an EMP machine gun, and it's awesome, and it's like really specialized against taking people's shields out. And all characters have shields and armor. But then also you might have this other gun that's like your shotgun, and it's like specialized in armor damage. It's like an incendiary shotgun. It shoots like essentially flaming rounds. And you know,
awesome.
So, yeah. or you could have these things in, you know, equipment. Like you could have these special grenades that are EMP, or you could have special what we call det packs, which are essentially remote detonated C4, and they apply a slow effect to people. And you can use all these things in combination when you're playing. It's not just you see a target and you shoot at them. You can like set up as almost like a trap and like, you know, open up with a grenade and then finish them with your gun and stuff like this. I realize I've somewhat strayed from the original question, but
yeah.
I got on a tangent. But anyways, but that actually, all of this was in response to a lot of the feedback of the core, you know, down the barrel shooting experience. In the first one, the multiplayer community had a lot less variety in the weapons they were using. Like we have a pretty, for our internal use, we have a pretty intense, like, metrics and stats tracking system, and we're seeing, okay, who's using which guns, how are their KDs, how is their team doing, you know, all this stuff. And you know, we wanted to balance things as best we could. You know, we say, well, in the first one the sniper rifle looked pretty weak, no one really used it, and people that did use it weren't doing very well. So you know, we went and using the data and using the feedback from people made it overall just a better game.
Has there been anything from the early like beta test that you've just been like, oh, we need to change this? I mean, you said you were analyzing a lot of internal data and stuff. Is there anything that just from that alone that you noticed was like, this is way too powerful, or this
totally
isn't powerful enough?
Totally. We had a closed beta, but our beta players, testers, I might call them, were very awesome. Like they were relentless at finding exploits and overpowered setups. So, I mean, that we appreciate that because, you know, one day some guy is like prolific in the beta, figures out that the napalm explosives are just a little bit out of balance, you know, maybe 10-20%. And then the next day everybody's using them. And I would get on the beta servers, I'd check it out, you know, in the afternoon I'd hop on and play like a half a game or something. I see, hey, what are people doing? And I'm like, man, everybody is using napalm. What is going on? And then we start looking at the metrics and it's like, well, napalm got a little nerf before people even got to use it. No, but it's good. It's good. We that is why we did an extensive, you know, an extensive beta. We got in enough players and gave them enough time to really, and we patched it multiple times to try and work out those little kinks and stuff.
It's great.
Very cool. And beyond, you know, the whole dropping in from, you know, the atmosphere and stuff, is there anything else that you feel really gives Section 8, like, a unique character to it, you know, just atmosphere, like, different than a lot of other games?
Yeah. I would say that, you know, this is something that isn't, like, an entirely new concept to the game genre, but it's something that is maybe a little bit less present in the most recent iteration of shooters that are kind of like, although the really awesome And I'm a big fan of these games. Like, kind of modern military or even historical military games have a lot of realism, and this is not that game. We are like a sci-fi game, and it's like got all the, you know, you're a super soldier in this, you know, awesome, like, powered armor suit, and you can do all sorts of crazy stuff. You can run. There's a thing called overdrive, and it's like when you're sprinting, you can sprint normally. And when you're sprinting for a few seconds, you go into overdrive, and it's like your camera pops back. Third person, you're just like trucking. You unequip your gun, and like you just run really fast, and it's really fun. And it's useful, actually, because you can get across the big maps to get some objectives and stuff. And like you can do, you know, you can run into people while you're doing it. It's like it's pretty cool.
Yes, awesome.
Yeah, that was my second favorite part of the original game. I loved Overdrive and I loved dropping in on people.
Yeah,
honestly, it was almost more fun to play like that than to actually even try to use guns. I was just like, if I die, oh well, I get to drop again, and I might land on someone and kill them like that, which was always cool.
Yeah. So the mobility, the character mobility and kind of the physics of the game are really extreme, and that's really fun. Like, you've got a jetpack as well, and we make these maps, and I feel like the maps in Section 8 Prejudice are another level up from the first game, where we added all this awesome vertical geometry. You've got this map, and it's like in the woods, and there's big rocks, and there's these big buildings with three stories, and then there's a cavern underground. And so, like, the jetpack really comes into great use for the players, because they're going all over the place, you know, vertically and horizontally.
Yeah, that's definitely very cool, because that's something I feel like a lot of shooters miss out on, is that vertical combat element that really is a lot more unique than, you know, a lot of modern games can do, especially when you end up with technology like jetpacks and futuristic stuff. Like, I know I think the heavy tank also has like jetpacks or something too as well, doesn't it?
We added some jetpacks. I'm saying this in quotes right now, because they're pretty much like, it's like a space shuttle, but it's like the convoy and the tank have like
a tank with jetpacks.
Yeah,
awesome.
I think I remember when I was playing, I literally just jumped up and landed on someone's head, and
I know where I'll be.
Yeah.
Yes, that is pretty fun. Like, it's especially fun. There's this one DCM called Convoy, and it's got this big slow moving truck, and you're trying to escort it from one place to the other, and it's not a very, you know, weaponized vehicle, but it has a ton of health. And, you know, so when it comes to driving the convoy, it's got its own jetpack, and you can run people over. That's like
awesome.
it's like a, you know, 18-wheeler of the future.
It's like the ultimate embarrassment. Like, they're trying to kill your convoy, and you just kind of jetpack up in the air and fall down on them and kill them with a unweaponized 18-wheel futuristic truck.
Yeah.
And I think the assault mech had some kind of like interesting melee mechanics as well. I don't remember too closely on that, because it's been a couple months that I had an opportunity to play the game.
Yeah, so there's a couple different, you know, forms of melee in the game. There's, you know, players can use a knife equipment and they can melee, and the mech itself has a melee attack, and you know, when you're doing melees, if you happen to optionally, players, like when they kill someone with a melee, they can do fatalities, which are like kind of for show, for fun beatdowns, and it's pretty sweet. And there's like all sorts of fatalities: player on player, mech on player, player on mech, you know, player on other vehicles like the hover bike or like like mech on hover bike. It's totally cool. Mech on mech fatalities, totally awesome.
I have a quick question about the escort mission, or the side quest. How do you handle whoever's going to drive the escort? Is it assigned to that person who has to drive it, or do you have to communicate with your team to get someone to drive this thing that everyone has to protect? Like, how do you deal with who's going to drive it and who's going to protect it?
Right. So, like, if the convoy DCM pops up, you're in a game, and it's like, you know, you get this alert. It's like, convoy DCM activated. And what happens is a dropship comes in, like the players drop into the game, and like when you buy deployables like turrets or when you buy vehicles, they also drop into the game in the same way, like physically, like the turrets drop in from the sky and they like hit the ground and they set up, and like, you know, vehicles are like kind of airdropped in, a dropship sort of flies over and drops in the vehicle. And so the convoy is just like that, a dropship comes over to this spot that's shown, everyone gets to see it on their map, and it just drops a convoy in, straight up empty convoy. And you know, and it's kind of a first come first serve thing, but like, you know, your team is rushing to get there, the enemy's rushing to get there, and, you know, someone gets in there, gets in, and everyone else is covering them. There's actually passenger seat as well that can, like, has the passenger has, like, a mortar, which is this awesome, like, kind of high-arcing cluster bomb, and they can help defend the vehicle by, like, gunning.
Cool. So, is it, like, is it dirt? I'm trying to think of how to word this. Can, like, the other team kill the players inside and take the escort for themselves and then switch it up, like, back and forth like that? Or
It's actually, like, one team's – it's like a sort of like a faction-associated convoy. It's like, you know, there's two teams – like, the two factions of the game are called Section 8 and Arm of Orion. So it's like the Section 8 convoy comes – and so it's only theirs. The arm can't take it. They can only destroy it.
And okay, so it's like an attack and a defend, basically.
Yeah, it's an attack and defend thing. That's, yes.
Okay, gotcha. Perfect. I was just thinking of, like, just going back and forth, like, some guy steals a convoy for his team, and another team steals it back, and then it's just, like, going back and forth in the middle of the map.
Yeah, have you guys ever explained exactly what causes the DCMs to just start for one team or another? Like, how does that start?
It's actually a pretty interesting system. It's like there's like an algorithm. It's like sort of pseudo random, but it also is based on sort of player contributions. And so players individually can pick their favorites. Like there's a menu you can go to in your profile, and you're like, well, I really like the convoy, or I really like the, airstrike, or the whatever, you know, the intelligence, which is like a capture the flag. Or you can pick as many as you want, and based on your preferences, when you're in a game, when you're getting like kills or you're doing objectives or whatever, every time you contribute to the battle in like a, you know, a powerful way, like which we call feats, the game calls feats, you not only accelerate the time for your team to get a DCM, but you influence the DCM to be a little bit weighted more towards your preferences.
Oh, cool.
So it is random, and it's random in both the one that spawns and the time it spawns, but like players can like weight it. And so if everyone on your team really loves, you know, the VIP mission, then it's pretty likely that the VIP mission is going to spawn for your team.
Hmm. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely nice. Is there something like that for levels as well? Like if you, or do you pick a level when you start picking what server you want?
It depends. Like if you're hosting a server, for example, you could pick the map rotation or just a single map or whatever you liked. Or if you're browsing in like the actual server browser, you can see the map. But if you just clicked essentially quick match and it just auto matched you into a game, you would not actually have the choice of what map. It would just put you in the best game for you, like ping wise, you know, but that's like almost full of players, you know, stuff like that.
Excellent. Is there going to be a demo for the game?
There is going to be a demo for the game.
Awesome.
Is it going to be Xbox Live Arcade game, Tyler?
Well, I know, but sometimes they don't always have demos.
Oh, true. Is there going to be a like amount of multiplayer time on Xbox Live that people will be able to do? I know.
Yeah, it's similar to what you would see in what you've seen maybe in like Battlefield and stuff like that, to where, you know, if you have a gold account and you get the demo, you can play, you know, something like an hour or two or so of multiplayer.
Say, Hydro Thunder did that last summer, and I really enjoyed that because it gave you the opportunity to, you know, try the multiplayer online. And definitely,
yeah,
that was a game that you kind of needed to play that if you wanted to figure out if you wanted to buy it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, how could we not let people play the multiplayer? It's you can get the demo and you can play, and that's great. And then you're like, man, I'm having a lot of fun. Runs out, buy it.
Sweet.
How long is the single player campaign approximately?
It's approximately, I'd say around 6 hours, but like give or take, depending on how fast you do it, what difficulty you do it on. But you know, it kind of clocks in pretty similar to the Halo, Call of Duty campaigns and stuff like that.
Yeah,
very cool.
Mm-hmm.
How does the health system work? Is it like a regeneration? Like you get shot a little, you go high for 10 seconds, and it comes back, or is there health packs or health pods?
Yeah, it's a regenerating system, and your health has two components, essentially. You have a shield and you have armor, and they regenerate at different speeds. The shield is kind of quicker to regenerate, but and the armor regenerates, but somewhat slowly. And you also kind of like, when you're like, you know, quote unquote out of combat or not taking damage, your health will regen. And, but there's also a thing, like there's a repair tool, which is kind of the medic item of the game. And it can be used to heal like other players or vehicles or turrets or whatever. And that heals the armor directly, and it does it very quickly. So, you know, kind of as a combination, your armor will regenerate itself over time, but it's, you know, you'll heal much faster if you're getting repaired.
When you say that there's a drop in turrets, like a tower defense style, is that like tower defense turrets? Like you drop them in and they just go to town, or are these things that you have to mount yourself to use effectively?
No, they're actually, AI controlled automated turrets, and there's a bunch of different types, and what you do is when you get, you know, say you earned the money, which we call requisition points to purchase a turret, you can open the sort of menu, and it has this little essentially invisible version of the turret, and you can aim around, and you know, you can test out, you can aim it and see, oh, I want to try and put it up on this rock or over in this corner and whatever, and wherever you want, you just essentially select that spot, and it drops in like straight down from the sky, and it lands right there, and then it just goes to town.
Are they destructible? Can the other team get rid of them if they're causing a problem? Or
completely? Oh, totally. Yeah. You definitely want to get rid of turrets if you see them.
Yeah. Can you drop the turrets on the enemy player?
Yes, you can. And
that's an achievement.
It would crush them. Yeah, it's very tricky, but it's awesome when you do that.
So do they kind of shoot into the atmosphere like you do, or are they kind of just like propelled down from like something and drop slowly? Or they how fast do they come in? I guess
they come in pretty fast. They take about like when you like have bought it and you say like launch it right here, you give the signal. It's like, you know, 15 seconds or something, and it shoots straight down. Like players can, when they're dropping, they can sort of glide, they can break, and they can like kind of hang glide around. But you know, the turret is like kind of it wraps itself up into sort of like a little tight rocket, and it just shoots straight down really fast, and it hits the ground and opens up, sort of blooms out.
Cool, it's like Transformers.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
Kind of, yeah.
Excellent. Man, I'm going to make it my personal mission to drop a turret on somebody. I don't care if it's an achievement or not. I'm going to do
it. I haven't looked at the achievement listing, but in the back of my head, it's just, I'm thinking right now that has to be an achievement.
Well, I just pulled it up since you guys brought it up. There is one called Falling with Style, but that's killing an enemy by dropping on them. So I don't think there's anything specifically for a turret, but falling on them is quite fun. I know that was my favorite part of the original game. It's probably the fifth time I've said this.
It is super gratifying to land on someone. I agree.
Yeah, it's kind of like the equivalent of like a no scope sniper kill in like the Halo games. It's just like it's that one thing that everybody's always trying to do, but when you do it, you know the whole game is going to hear about it.
Oh yeah.
Right. It's even better seeing one when you're just on the ground fighting, and then someone else just gets like dropped on it. It's intense.
Yeah. Like you're getting your ass kicked by some guy and you're running out, you gotta reload your gun, and then all of a sudden your buddy drops in and is like, hey man, what's going on? Like right on top of that.
Okay guys, did I land on something?
It's moments like that that make games a lot more replayable, and that's why I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, that's definitely something we hope the game has a lot of, you know, you take all these fun elements and they just combine. You would never expect the ways that people would use them, and it's awesome.
What's like your favorite moment that you've had while playing the game, you know, testing it, playing the beta and whatever? Like what's like the coolest thing that you've seen happen?
Mm-hmm. I have a lot of good moments, and I say my best moments that I have had is we, in the development every week, we would do like a play test with the team, like most of the team. The dev team, we would all get together and play. We'd pick a game, you know, a mode or whatever, something specific that we wanted to test, and we'd all play and we'd fill a server. Yeah. And you know, there's like, those are awesome games because it's like kind of like playing an in-house game, and it's, those games are the best. And like, for example, one time we were doing a swarm play test, which is like that co-op survival. Mm-hmm. And we were testing like the maximum difficulty. It's called insane. And it's like, it's really hard. And so it was like myself and the three other game designers who are like all very good at the game. And we were playing it on insane on the hardest map. And it was like, it took us like four tries and we just like kept dying. And it was really awesome. We were like trying to figure it out how to beat it. And it's great that like, you know, it was just a really fun time. We like, the playtest was supposed to last an hour and we like, it was at the end of the day and we like stayed late because we just like kept wanting to beat it.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's like, it becomes just out of principle that you have to finish this and like to see if you guys can team up and just like hold out just long enough to finish.
I have to wrap things up. Is there anything you'd like to share with our, I guess, listeners this time?
I mean, I don't know. I'm really excited. It's a great game. I hope everyone tries it out. I mean, it's coming out
April 20th.
It's coming out April 20th, so we're really close. And you should definitely, I mean, I would say go out and buy it. But if you're not going to go buy it, at least go try the demo, and then we'll see how much you like it.
Very cool. All right, so I want to thank you for joining us again today, Mark. This has been awesome. And
yeah, thanks, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. It was fun. We'll